it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to Talking Buffalo, featuring conversations with guests from around the world of sports, media, pop culture, and all things Buffalo, with your host, Patrick Moran.
All right, and what is going on, everybody? How you doing? Welcome to a midweek episode of Talking Buffalo, your weekday daily driver for Buffalo Sports Talk and More. My name is Patrick Moran. Thank you very much, as always, for locking in, whether you're watching this on YouTube, whether you're listening to this on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from. I can't begin to tell you how much I appreciate each and every single one of you. And I got to say, too, right off the top, before we even get into anything else today, the numbers over the last 6 to 8 weeks or so have skyrocketed on this show, both audio, video. The growth has been amazing. And again, I don't go a day without waking up in the morning before I start thinking about what the next podcast is going to be. And I don't, not once do I wake up and say, man, this is just incredible. And it's all because of everyone who is checking out the show. So, you know, it sounds like a broken record when I say it, but I really mean it when I say thank you very much. I appreciate you all very, very much. All right, so it is May 1st. Cue the on social media, Facebook, Twitter. Most of you will be listening to this on May 1st anyway. Cue the in sync. It's going to be May memes. I love it. Feels like it kind of puts winter just a little bit more behind us here in Western New York. Hopefully the cold, shitty weather is now a thing of a past, and we can enjoy at least a couple months anyway of some good weather. Today's episode, we're calling this Pod Synergy. In a way, debuting something new, but in a way it's not. Let me explain that real quick here. If you're a regular to the show, you know, over the last handful of months or so, occasionally on Fridays, we were doing a segment called Fan Friday, and that's where you, the listener or the viewer, control the narrative of the show. I pluck out your questions, some of your comments, I read them off, and in some cases, I don't reply to them because there's not really a reply that's needed. I just want to voice what you're saying, what you're thinking. And in other cases, they're questions or stuff, and I do add to the conversation a little bit as well. But anyway, it was a show where you completely control the narrative. That's what we're doing now. But instead of calling it Fan Friday, I'm kind of rebranding it a little bit, and then we're going to call it Pod Synergy going forward. The reason for that is quite simple. You're listening to this show, watching this show, and it's Wednesday. It's not Friday. We're going to be doing this semi-regularly. It's not going to be an every week thing, but we'll be doing it semi-regularly. And when we do, it could be any day of the week. Primarily, it's going to be Wednesday, but it could end up dropping any day of the week. Long story short, this is going to be kind of an episode where when I don't have a guest or I need to throw something together and I really want to highlight what all you guys are thinking, we're going to drop this. So anyway, again, Pod Synergy, and it will be a semi-regular feature going forward on the show, primarily dropped here on Wednesdays. If you happen to be watching this on the video side, I'll come clean with you guys. I have a small window here as I record this mid-afternoon on Tuesday to kind of jam this in. Typically, on the video side, I would have some nice graphics up with a lot of your questions displayed, a lot more photos, maybe a couple video clips, stuff like that. But don't really have the time to do that today. However, there are some really good questions and comments that I did pluck. And if you want to know how you can be a part of this specific episode, it's quite simple. If you're watching this on YouTube, just simply leave a comment in any of the videos. I go through all the comments and I will pluck a few of those. You can also tweet at me at Patrick Moran TB. Any thoughts, any takes that you'd like to have included on the show, you can email us, talkingbuffalopodcast@gmail.com. And we also have a Facebook page, the Talking Buffalo Podcast Facebook page, where I'll look for some pretty cool questions and comments as well. So that's going to be the basis of what this show, Pod Synergy, is going to be about. And again, like I said, not all Wednesdays, but most Wednesdays, you can look for this show. All right, now that I'm done blabbering here and explaining exactly what this is and how we're going to do it, let's just actually jump into some of the questions and comments. I'm going to start off at Kenny as Brand. This is from YouTube. He says, what is the singular thing you like most and least about this draft as it pertains to the Buffalo Bills? In terms of what I liked most about the draft, again, keeping this specific to the Buffalo Bills, when I look at this draft crop, this haul that the Bills had just last week, I like the fact that they didn't force an edge rusher too early when it wasn't there. I came into this draft thinking there was a very realistic chance that the Buffalo Bills could take an edge rusher as early as the first round. In fact, last week I talked about it on the show a little bit, two Saturdays ago or so, met up with some media peeps, and one of them who I had met for the first time was Jim Monos, who does the podcast with Tyler Dunn at Go Long. And during our conversation, he was asking me like for a bold prediction. And I said that the Bills would trade up to go get Jared Verse. And it's funny because the spot that I actually had the Bills going into was the Rams spot at 19, which is where Jared Verse did go off the board in real life with the Rams. But anyway, between him, I thought that maybe the Bills might trade up for him, which, you know, I got to say, the thing I liked most about this draft was that they didn't force an edge rusher. So to be fair, had they, you know, if Laiatu Latu fell into their lap, or if Jared Verse fell into their lap, or just required a short trade up, that's not really forcing the issue, so to speak. But I didn't want defensive edge, not this draft. Like, make that a priority next offseason. I thought there were bigger things, bigger fish for the Bills to fry right now than edge. I also got nervous in the low 20s. I said, you know what? We're thinking wide receiver, nothing else but Chop Robinson, who we did take in our second Bills mock draft here on this show. He was still lingering around. I thought maybe he could end up being a possibility for the Bills, but Miami kind of took that out of play when they took him 22nd overall. But anyway, the edges were gone, all the top edges, and I was concerned that maybe the Bills would force it and take a guy who would be a reach at edge in the first round, and that didn't happen. And then going into the second round, there are a handful of guys that are pretty good players, but not guys that I loved at pick 60 in the second round. So the Bills did not force the issue with edge rusher. I still think it's a position that will be addressed come June 1st. You know, everyone talks about the money that the Bills are going to have from the Trey White release come June 1st, which they are. And they're not going to go out and do anything crazy. But I tend to think that they might go and get themselves one of these available edge rushers come June 1st, maybe even a bigger priority than signing another receiver like, say, MVS or DJ Chark. I know some people like to say Odell Beckham Jr. because he is still out there. Those receivers are out there, but I kind of feel like maybe Yannick Ngakoue, one of those edge rushers, Lawson, who's played for the Jets, I know he's out there. That might be a bigger priority come June 1st. And even if not, I think next offseason, going to get yourself a good edge, because you're probably going to lose Von Miller. In fact, you're almost certainly going to lose Von Miller. You got a first, you got two twos next year. You address that next year. So I was really happy to see the Bills not force the issue with edge rusher, because I thought there were better players, better value on the in the draft early on. So that's what I like the most. In terms of the least, I mean, I'm going to sound like a broken record. If you watch this show, you listen to the show, you already know where I'm going with this. I thought the Bills should have taken two wide receivers, and I think that second receiver should have came as early as the second round. Like, maybe he could have made a case to make both second-round picks a wide receiver all the way through the fourth. So, to look back, what I like least, that definitely would be in it. I don't hate any of the players, actually, that the Buffalo Bills took. I want to put that out there, too. But in terms of what I like the least, like many of you, I was really all in on the Bills doubling down at the position. At Thomas Steele 07 says, among the current Buffalo Bills players, who do you think came away from this draft the biggest winners and the biggest losers? I kind of like that question. Good one there, Thomas. In terms of the winners, I got three. And again, these are current veterans. Number one, I would say Matt Collins, kind of for what the reasons are that we just discussed. The Bills did not double down at wide receiver. If they go get themselves a receiver, second, third, fourth round, that guy, the expectation is probably immediately he's your, at worst, fourth wide receiver, which pushes Matt Collins down the depth chart before he even gets into training camp. So I would say Matt Collins is a big winner. By the way, little sidebar here. As much as I still hate the fact that the Bills didn't double dip, as much as I still think there is a very realistic chance that the Buffalo Bills may still sign a veteran wide receiver, somebody of note too, not just any receiver. By the way, Zay Jones got released on Tuesday. Wonder if that's a guy who might come into play for the Bills later on. But anyway, my point was this. I like Matt Collins. We did a large chunk of an episode not long after he signed dedicated to talking about Matt Collins and how he's a better football player than you think. Talked to two guys who've played with him in Atlanta and really good things to say about him. Didn't really do anything offensively with Atlanta last year. Didn't really have an opportunity either. But 2 years ago with Vegas, your boy had almost 700 yards receiving. He's a pretty good football player. And he's a really good blocker. And he can play special teams. So I feel like he is a good signing. He's somebody that the Bills like more than a lot of fans. To a lot of fans, I think he's just another name. Just another of 90 bodies on this Bills roster. Or what soon will be 90. They don't have 90 on the team right now. You get what I'm saying, though. But I think this organization, this team, likes Matt Collins more than most people do. So anyway, he was a winner because they didn't double down on wide receiver. I would say Kyre Elam was a winner. The Bills did not draft a corner all the way until the sixth round. Daquan Hardy, who is not a boundary guy. He's a slot corner. He's a nickel slot guy. Also a punt returner. Kyre Elam will get every opportunity in the world to go in camp and at least be that third corner. I think the two starters are pretty much set now. Rasul Douglas, Christian Benford. Kyre Elam's future might have been in doubt. Still may be in doubt, but at least because of the draft, it's not further in doubt. So I thought he was a winner. And then I would say the third winner, probably David Edwards. So, you know, the Bills, in a matter of 24 hours, they cut Mitch Morse. The day before that, they traded Ryan Bates to Chicago, and they announced, well, they didn't announce, but Tim Graham reported, it's widely reported now, that Connor McGovern's going to be the center this year. And David Edwards essentially, seemingly now at this point, especially after the draft, is going to be handed the starting guard spot. Now, they did sign Leo Collins. Potentially could be comp for Edwards. He's definitely played plenty of guard, but Brandon Bean kind of gave an indication that he's going to start out being he's going to compete for a reserve tackle spot. So it certainly seems like David Edwards is a starting guard for this season. I would say that could have been in jeopardy had the Bills taken a guy on day two who could have came in and challenged right away. Cooper Beebe was a guard out there for Kansas State that I had my eyes on, but the Bills did not go guard. In fact, they didn't take any offensive lineman until the fifth round. They took a center who primarily plays center, and he might ultimately become a guard as well, but that's going to be a ways away. So I think David Edwards is a big winner based on this draft. Flip side, losers, I got two. And I hate saying the word losers because they're not draft losers, but I will say maybe the draft didn't go their way. so to speak. One of them is a new guy, Mike Edwards. So the Bills signed him to a one-year deal from Kansas City, and he's your free safety. Likely still your starting free safety, but maybe now, because of the draft, not quite the lock that he would have been before. You know, the Bills take Cole Bishop, and my expectation is he's going to come into training camp, and if not immediately, really soon, he is going to challenge Mike Edwards for a starting spot. So Mike Edwards goes from being your surefire starting free safety to maybe not quite 100% lock, especially as the season goes on. So for that reason, I'd say he's a draft loser among the current veterans on the team. And then the other guy is, I'd have to say Ty Johnson. And I love Ty Johnson. Boy, do I love Ty Johnson. I was excited. You know, there are a lot of bigger name running backs out there when free agency started. But I was pounding the table for the Bills to bring back Ty Johnson. And the reason is quite simple. You're speculating, you're projecting with a lot of these other guys out there, what they may have been able to come in and do or not do for the Bills. With Ty Johnson, you saw firsthand. You saw with your own eyes, not just what Ty Johnson can be for the Buffalo Bills, but what Ty Johnson can be in a Joe Brady offensive coordinated offense. I thought he played really, really well. And he'll still get an opportunity to play really well too. But the Bills drafting Ray Davis in the fourth round certainly puts a bit of a damper, potentially, at least anyway, on what Ty Johnson's role with this team is going to be. I would say before the draft started, Ty Johnson was, without question, your undisputed number two running back who's going to get a lot of playing time. Now, after the draft, Ty Johnson is probably your number two running back. He's probably going to get a decent amount of playing time. But assuming Davis stays healthy and catches on relatively quick, he's going to challenge for reps. He's going to challenge for opportunities right away. And if he gets them, that's going to come more at the expense of Ty Johnson, of course, than anyone else. One more question here, then we'll get to a quick break. At Chipotle Charles 1 says, who are a few of the biggest steals of the entire draft? And are any of them Buffalo Bills selections? I love the selection of Javon Solomon in the fifth. All right, so the Bills took an edge rusher in the fifth round. Really crazy productive out of Troy, I think it was. Like 32 sacks over the last 2 years. But he's a project guy. Could be a steal. Certainly a developmental guy. I do love the fact that Von Miller is here this season to really work with him. I think that will help him a lot. Say what you want about Von Miller. You know, say what you want about some of the off-field shit that he's got himself into. Say what you want about him being an absolute human mush when it comes to predictions. I mean, quite literally, anytime this guy goes on Instagram or his podcast and he predicts something with the Buffalo Bills, quite literally, it never comes true. In fact, it's annoying. And I just wish he would shut up and not put out any more posts with predictions and stuff like that because it makes him look stupid. All that said, he is a great mentor for somebody like Solomon. So I'm not going to count on Solomon, certainly not this year, to really do much. But I do like the fact that they picked him up when they did in the fifth round. And I think he will stand to learn a lot from being alongside Von Miller this year. But anyway, steals around the league. Shocker, I got four and three of them are wide receivers. Javon Baker to the Patriots early in the fourth round. That made me sick. They're probably up to that point, maybe other than in the moment when the Bills traded down twice, because I really was pro Xavier Leggett. But anyway, when the Bills traded down twice on Thursday night in that moment, for a lot of reasons, I was pissed off straight up. Got over it quick, understood quick. But day three of the draft, and I hear the name Javon Baker going to the New England Patriots of all teams. That really pissed me off. Hated that. I think he is going to be a very good pro for them. I love Cleveland getting Jamari Thrash late in the fourth round, pick 156. Personally, I thought the Bills should have taken him over Ray Davis, just my opinion, but I think that could be a big steal for the Browns. Malik Washington lasting all the way to the sixth round. and going to the Miami Dolphins. I think he's got an opportunity to be a big steal. He could do some good things there as a slot receiver. I know they got Burials for now, but maybe not even so much this year. But I think it's a really good pick for them. And then I got to tell you, when it comes to safety, I like Cole Bishop, and I'm high on Cole Bishop, but I think Cole Bishop could become a very impactful player, and I completely understand why the Buffalo Bills took him. I really do. But I got to be honest with you. If it was me personally, maybe even at pick 60, I probably would have taken Cameron Kitchens from Miami. I just feel like he might have not have all those great athletic traits, but man, that dude is a football player and a playmaker. And that's the guy who I came into this draft wanting the Bills to take. So the fact that he lasted all the way to the very end of the third round and he goes to the Rams, I thought that was a huge steal for the Rams. So yeah, three receivers, Cameron Kitchens, my biggest steal. Quick break, come right back. Got a handful of these Bills, maybe even a couple non-Bills things as well. So I'll be right back.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing, but you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling three-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour three-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
All right, I am back here, and we are doing a Pod Synergy, which, again, if you're late joining the show, if you hit the YouTube video and fast-forwarded for some reason right to the middle, this is going to be an episode where you guys control the narrative, your takes, your comments. I read them off and respond, at least some of them anyway, on this show. All right, let's continue here. At CGI Flick 1719, finally, level-headed people who have a realistic take on the Bills, unlike these other channels who just want to kiss Bean and McDermott's you-know-what. All right, so quickly before proceeding, he's talking about an episode that just aired a couple days ago, myself and Joe from Queens. He says, the Bills need some hard truth about the direction we're going in, and it's true we are not all in this year and definitely not trying to win the Super Bowl. McDermott cares about defense and cheap offensive players, including Josh Allen. Bean is not a GM. He is an accountant who only cares about the books, look how the books look 5 years out. His job is to bring in the best players to win a Super Bowl at all costs, and then you do your job by fixing the books. That route is not easy, but it's your job. This guy is trying to win a Super Bowl on a budget. Shaking my head. Not going to happen. All right, well, first and foremost, I appreciate the comment. I appreciate any comment that comes in on the show, and I appreciate anybody, of course, who watches. Don't really have too much to say. The Bills are trying to win a Super Bowl, though. I'll say that. They're trying to win a Super Bowl, but they're not sacrificing the future to do it. And you can't really, you say what you want about Brandon Bean, but before this year, trading for Stephon Diggs, signing Von Miller, this team has spent every allowable penny trying to get the best players they can and put themselves in a position to win the Super Bowl. So, again, all due respect, I appreciate the comment, but they're not just trying to win a Super Bowl on a budget. This year they are a little bit because they had no choice. But thanks for the comment, my guy. At David Molly 5464 says, why do people want to double dip? Who are you taking off the field? Shakir, Coleman, Samuel, Kincaid, Knox, Cook? Because Joe Brady isn't taking any one of those off the field. And look for two more tight end sets. Oh. And there was no fifth rounder this year better than Justin Shorter. And again, that's from David Malley, 5464. Thanks for the input. I'm not the least bit sold on Justin Shorter for what it's worth. And the depth is lacking at wide receiver. You got four guys and a bunch of unproven until proven, you know, until otherwise, nothing. And you can make a case right now. Let's be fair here. As things stand right now, I think you can make a case that Coleman, or any way you want to order it, because one through four, however you want to put it, Coleman, Shakir, Samuel, Mac Collins, the Bills have a great football team. In fact, the Bills are tied for fifth still among the betting favorites to win the Super Bowl. There's a four-way tie, so they're fifth up to eighth, however you want to put it. Point being is they're still in the top 25% of the league betting favorites to win a Super Bowl. That said, that wide receiver unit to me right now is pretty whack. Probably a bottom third receiving core right now in the NFL, and that's healthy. If any one of those four guys go down, that's a unit that is in trouble. So I'm still very much all for getting another receiver come June 1st or whenever it may be, and not the dude from Detroit who just missed a year because of gambling. He's not the answer. I can tell you that with some confidence. Justin Shorter, I want to be careful. I said it. I'm not sold on Justin Shorter. I'm not saying I'm out on Justin Shorter because I learned my lesson last year. A year ago, when the Bills did nothing to replace Tremaine Edmonds, and I mean nothing, I was out on Terrell Bernard being a potential starter. Thought that was a joke. And look what he turned into. So sometimes players ascend and you don't see it coming. I'm not going to completely dismiss the fact that Justin Shorter may be way more than what we think, most of us think he's going to be right now. I mean, he is a fifth round pick a year ago, so the Bills saw something in him. So I'm not going to completely dismiss that. But as things stand right now, till I see otherwise, I'm not sold on him. We'll say, though, in fairness, you do make a good point. Because if you are healthy and you got Shakir Coleman and Samuel out there, or you're running 12 personnel with Kincaid and Knox, you want to run the football more. You want Josh Allen to use his legs a little bit more. Maybe not a ton. Maybe not as much as he did down the stretch last year, because your boy might not last 17 games playing the way he did over the last month or so when it was almost like a playoff game every week. So in fairness, you do make a good point. You know, you can go double dip at wide receiver, but how much is that guy going to see the field? I guess my counter is you want to have as much quality depth as possible. So, you know, you go draft a second receiver in rounds 3-4. He might not start, but I think he'd be farther up the depth chart than, say, an Andy Isabella or a Tyrell Shavers, something like that. All right, moving on. At Movie Riz 1912, whether it was Keon Coleman or another receiver, how much do you think went into what kind of personal relationship he'll have with Josh Allen as much as anything else, seeing the way things played out with Stephon Diggs? I tell you, man, first of all, it's a really good point, good question, and my answer would be a ton. A ton. I think the Bills took a very long, hard look when it came to this receiving group, this prospect crop coming into this draft. I would be willing to bet money that they put maybe more focus on the human side of it, the personality side of it, maybe more than they ever have, at least under this regime. I think when it comes to Stephon Diggs, he's on the back nine of his career, but even so, he is still a hell of a receiver. He's still a very good receiver. He might not be elite anymore. Hell, going forward, he might not even be truly great anymore, but he's still good. He's still very good. He was already under contract. The Bills did not have any financial gain by trading him whatsoever. In fact, they lost $3 million against this year's cap by trading him. So unlike saving money with Morse or Jordan Poyer or Trey White, the Bills didn't gain shit financially by trading Stephon Diggs. That tells you the obvious, very obvious. There's a disconnect between Stephon Diggs and the organization as a whole, certainly Sean McDermott, again, maybe the whole organization, but more specifically with Josh Allen. You can't sit here and say that played no role, because I refuse to believe, and I feel like if you're a reasonable person thinking about this, you conclude the same. If Stephon Diggs, to some extent, may be declining, at least to some extent, but he has a tremendous relationship with Josh, and there's no issues inside the organization, and he's not asking out. He's not sending cryptic tweets. He's not doing, you know, saying God knows whatever he may or may not be saying in that locker room to kind of force the issue. If there's none of that, you're not going to convince me that Stephon Diggs still is in a Buffalo Bill for one more year. We all thought Stephon Diggs would be a Buffalo Bill for 2024, and then the Bills probably move on. It certainly, logically, seems to make a lot more sense. The fact that they traded him when he still got at least something left as a football player, and they're not really deep and strong at the wide receiver position, the fact they still traded him tells you a lot about his personality, Josh's personality, Sean's personality, and without blaming one or the other, they just clearly were not jiving anymore. They were not jiving at all. So sure, I think the Bills, whether it was Coleman, Mitchell, Leggett, Worthy, whoever it may be, I guarantee you during those interviews, they were probably as much as X's and O's trying to find out, is this guy going to be compatible with my quarterback for the next 4 or 5 years or beyond? And with Keon Coleman, I feel like we've seen a little bit of glimpses, signs of it, that press conference, a very memorable opening press conference. Who didn't love that? I mean, that dude's got some charisma, man. He's got some character. He's got some personality. And you just get a sense that him and Josh are really going to jive well. I certainly feel that way. And I don't know, I kind of get those, like, Chad Johnson, those Ocho Cinco vibes when it comes to Keon Coleman. So anyway, to answer your question directly, I think the personality for Keon Coleman and how the relationship they expected to be with Josh Allen plays a ton in all that. All right, a couple more here that I want to get out. Mazvids, he is a regular on the YouTube channel, the Talk Buffalo YouTube channel, watches pretty much every show and often chimes in. And he's got some really, really good takes. I don't always agree with them, but I respect the hell out of him. Anyway, he says, Joe from Queens is living in the past. The NFL has evolved. It's not 2020 anymore. Most of the top offenses are leaning heavily into 12 personnel in today's game. Baltimore, Kansas City, Philly, Green Bay. Joe compared our weapons to that of a San Francisco, which also uses 12 and 13 personnel at a high clip. Kittle, McCaffrey are the centerpieces of that offense. Tight end, running back. Bosa, he said centerpiece, but I think he had Bosa wrong there. Anyway, their wide receivers aren't small speedsters either. They're big body guys that could block in the running game. I know you guys hate defense, but it's just the fact of the matter that with a quarterback who's as turnover prone as Allen, the Bills need a top defense. Look at all the games the Bills won solely because of defense in the playoffs over the past 4 years. The Miami wildcard game, the Baltimore divisional round. Two of the last four seasons, the Bills lose at home a round earlier than they did. And the only reason they didn't is because the defense saved the day. Look at 2023. The defense held 11 teams at 21 points or less. Josh Allen went 1-7 against teams that scored more than 21. By the way, not fact-checking this, so I want to put that out there. Anyway, the Chargers, who scored 22, is the only team that the Bills beat, and that win came by a heroic performance by the defense. Look at last year's season schedule. Look at the wins and the loss column. Buffalo's offense has been incapable of winning shootouts since 2020, and most of the shootouts they lose are because of turnovers, like the fourth corner interception and Josh threw in a double coverage in the shadow of his own end zone in the 2023 Philly game. The Bills need defense. They need to provide a safety blanket for Josh Allen because he turns the ball over so frequently at the most inopportune times. All right, I want to break this down real quick, and I'm also going to throw a little bit of shade towards this guy, my man, Ms. Vids, because he's not wrong about a lot of what he says, but I think it becomes kind of obvious. Your boy is a little bit of a Josh Allen hater. I mean, let's be real here, okay? A little bit of a Josh Allen hater. Very critical of him. If you read a lot of what he says in the comments, you would think that Josh Allen borderline stinks. That said, though, a lot of what he says is really spot on. It's fair, especially about the defense and just the makeup of good teams around the league. I think, and he was talking about myself, but also, again, Joe from Queens, who does my Monday shows with me. Joe from Queens is very wide receiver trained, spread the ball around, throw it all over the place. But, you know, Maz Viz makes some really good points. A lot of teams are playing more and more 12 personnel. You look at Frisco, and the centerpieces of their offense are often their tight end and their running back. It's not just Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. And those aren't small little speedster separation guys. Those are some big bodies, some big boys, break tackles, yards after catch types of players. So, sure, there needs to be a balance. You can't ignore defense. And Joe from Queens, in all due respect, he hates defense. Like, the thought of the Bills adding more to the defensive line, especially if it's early in the draft, makes him nauseous. So, man, I get both sides of it. And again, really good comments, minus the little bit of hating on Josh, but appreciate it. All right, last couple here. At 00 Laramie says, how good was Diggs as our number one second half of the season in playoffs last year? It was definitely the right move, letting him go and getting a second, not even a question. He would have brought nothing but drama to the team this year. I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum at this point on this show. I just thought I feel like he's too important, or he was too important to this team, even as a decoy, if nothing else. He was too important to this football team to trade him for an asset next year that doesn't help you this year. I was on board with the trade. Talked about this the last couple of days, actually. Very on board with the trade at the time, because I really thought moving on from Diggs was a bean chess piece to make an even bigger move. That has not turned out to be the case as things stand. The only move has been drafting a guy in the second round. So now it seems more like just getting this guy out of your quarterback's hair, getting a nice premium 2025 asset for him, and getting him completely off the books for 2025. No dead cap money, no nothing going towards next year. But from a football perspective only, it was not a cut and dry good move, because that position and maybe the Bills offense as things stand today is not better than it was a year ago. All right, last two here, and that's it for Bill stuff. Ed says, you haven't even talked about your thoughts on the Sabres hiring Lindy Ruff. What's up with that? All right, well, in terms of not talking about it much, just haven't had a chance. I mean, that news dropped dead smack during getting ready for the draft. And on this show, which is a Buffalo sports talk show, and you know, we do some other stuff as well from time to time, but primarily it's football and everybody cares about the draft. So we were really dedicated and knee deep into as much draft content as humanly possible. Tone Pucks, who I usually have on Wednesday night shows for the Thursday podcast, pretty big on talking Sabres, hasn't been on the last couple of weeks because, like I said, last minute mock drafts and just NFL draft talk, and then the actual draft itself this past week. But starting with tomorrow's show, actually, Tone Pucks will be here in studio with me again. So we're going to start to dive back into some Sabres stuff, 100%. As far as the move, real quick here, and we'll talk about it more tomorrow, just felt pretty obvious to me about Lindy Ruff. I got a sense that Craig Berube was in the mix. I can't remember. It was in some NHL insider reported. I don't remember who it was. But it kind of felt like he was not interested, and that happened quickly and like almost immediately after that. If they didn't already pivot to Lindy Ruff from the get-go, they certainly did after Craig Berube maybe resisted their overtures. And that's me speculating. I don't really know that. But when you heard Kevin Adams speak the afternoon when Giordano got fired, it felt to me pretty obvious. He was talking about they knew what they wanted. So you got to assume that that was Lindy. All right, last question here. It's not even a question. It's a statement. We'll call him a boy. I'm going to throw a little bit of shade back at him. My guy, Mike. We'll just say Mike. We won't put the last name on or anything. Good friend of mine. And for everybody else, I said, leave a comment on YouTube or tweet at me. Your boy texted me. Says, I watched your podcast today. Talk about a show last week. I don't want to insult you. You're doing great. You just have an attitude about you, like you're right about everything. Also, between you, Pucks, and every goofy podcast on your show, or yeah, every guest, I should say, I'm sorry. Between you, Pucks, and every goofy guest on your show, no one even mentioned Keon. All right, well, you know, he's probably right. Maybe I do have that attitude that I'm right about everything. I don't know. Maybe. But the part about that I really got a kick out of, he goes, I don't want to insult you. And then he proceeds to tell me I have an attitude that I'm right about everything. And the funny part is he goes, between you, Pucks, and every goofy guest on your show. I mean, that is quite literally an insult. Kind of funny, though, so can't hit on that. Real quick, in terms of no one even mentioning Keon, because I don't think many people thought that Keon Coleman was going to be the pick for the Buffalo Bills. The Bills had a first-round pick. Very, very few people had Keon Coleman going in their first round. And I listened to a lot of other draft podcasts, a lot of Bills podcasts. I read a lot of Bills content on the internet. And I don't think I saw anybody pick the Bills or have the Bills picking Keon Coleman, because he didn't seem to be the fit for what Brandon Bean talked about, what he was looking for. They were talking about adding speed to the unit. They were talking about adding explosiveness and separation. And Keon Coleman has a very good skill set, one that might ultimately translate into a great career with the Bills. But what Brandon Bean described is not the type of player that Keon Coleman is. So I think for that reason, that became a big surprise. But I always appreciate you, Mike, and appreciate the backhanded compliment. And that's going to do it for this episode. Like I said, we'll be doing these most weeks. So if you want to get your comment, your take, your question featured the next time we do this, just if you're watching us on YouTube, again, leave a comment. Also hit that like button and subscribe. Helps us with the algorithm on YouTube. And then, like I said, tweet at me at Patrick Marin TV. Your questions, your comments, even if you're not tweeting at me, I see something good, I might steal it and pass it off as one. But anyway, I'll be back, right back at it tomorrow. Tone Pucks will be with me in studio. Talk to you guys then. Take care.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.